You're listening to episode 20 of the Massive Attack Podcast. I think I'm Mitch. You're listening to episode 20 of the Massive Attack Podcast. I'm Mitch, and with me, as always, is Joe.
Hi, Mitch.
It is always, isn't it?
It is.
You haven't put any episodes up without me?
No. I was thinking about it.
No. Fair enough.
No, that wouldn't work. Anyway.
So, it's been how long?
It's been a month. It feels longer.
It does feel longer.
And it mainly feels longer because I've been playing a lot of games and watching a lot of movies, I think. And when I was writing down the stuff for the run sheet today, I was like, wow, have I really watched that many? But as I want is, we will jump straight into gaming, I think.
Yes.
It's been another big month for sales on the Xbox.
Trying to get people into loving the Xbox still?
Yeah.
After the Xbox One shenanigans?
We did mention on our last episode in the little precursor to the show that we'd taped the episode and we talked about all the announcements of the DRM and all was on internet and all that sort of stuff. And then Microsoft turned around two days later and did the
backflip.
Xbox 180, as they're calling it.
Yep.
And changed their mind. And now I read the other day there's a bit of an internet petition of all these people saying that we want the things they said. And
the
we
family want, yeah, the, pass or whatever they called it.
Because there was a few good things and they've got rid of the good things as well.
I was kind of happy with a lot of it. Yes, I mean, secondhand gaming, but I think pricing would have leveled out.
I think so.
To a level of, all right, people have to pay this much on top of it, therefore they're going to pay X amount for a secondhand game, and it will balance out to what we're used to, and what they're doing with the sales and the digital copies of games and stuff now. I think pricing would have been okay. I mean, the Australia tax is pretty bad when it comes to paying $60 to $80 a game, but I think it wouldn't have been bad. But fans are a bunch of entitled cunts.
Yes.
It's like, oh, we don't like what you're doing. And then they changed it to what people said, and now it's like, but we want it back the way it was, but, like what you said. It was sort of like, well, you can't have everything, unfortunately.
And there's all these fans jumping up and down saying, yeah, we made them change. I think Sony probably made them change more than anything. The fact that Sony came out and went, we're not going to do this, and you can play used games and all that sort of stuff. And Microsoft then probably went, well, let's just look how much sales we're going to lose.
Oh, it is Wii, and the pre-orders would have done it. So.
But who knows?
Yeah.
But anyway, so yes, as part of their We Love the Fans, Xbox have been throwing away their free games to everyone on gold.
Yes.
And so far for the month of July, the first game wasn't a good one.
Defense Grid?
Yes.
I didn't even bother. It's Tower Defense, and I have nothing against Tower Defense game. I've just never really played any. So I think Toy Soldier's the only one I've given a go at, and it's just I haven't given it the time. So I don't know if I like it or not. I've never played Plants vs. Zombies, so I'm assuming it's not my sort of game, only because I've never played it. So, yeah, I didn't even bother with it, even though it was free.
Yeah, I downloaded it, but I haven't actually set it up or played any of it or anything.
So
like
it
that.
Could so be awesome.
It probably is. Although it's very old. I think it's like a 2008 game or something like that.
It's like we play new games.
True. But then the second game that they've been giving away free this month was Assassin's Creed 2. And again, I think both of us have downloaded that, but haven't actually started playing it.
Nope.
Mainly because we've been playing a lot of other stuff.
We have. Like, I don't know if I'll get to it.
Well,
but it's there. Because it's free.
Well, Xbox did have what they called the Ultimate Xbox Sale a few weeks ago, earlier on in the month.
Yeah, which I didn't get onto early enough, unfortunately.
No, I think I got onto it in day two, so I'd already missed a couple of things on the first day. But looking at some of the stuff that was on the first day, the main ones that I would have bought anyway, I think I already had. There was like Lego Batman 2 and Lego Lord of the Rings, I think it was, for quite cheap. But I've already got those on disc, so I didn't bother. But we jumped in on day two, and I know you purchased quite a few games.
I did. Got Bulletstorm for like $5.
Yeah, and I've played Bulletstorm, and I can recommend that it is a fun, fairly quick game.
I just went through my games before. And
what else did you pick up? You picked up Prey for, I think that was
$2.95. Prey was $3, yeah, $2.95. I think they were the only two.
And WWE 13 that we both picked up, which was
$20 in the end. It wasn't that cheap, but compared to a store-bought copy, it's cheaper. And basically, I've had no interest in wrestling games for years. You've bought a few on this current generation console, but you're a bigger fan than I am. But one of their favourite podcasts, the No Quarters guys, actually talked about WWE 13 and the fact that you could go back and play the Attitude Era or replay the Attitude Era in storyline mode. And that was the appealing thing for me. It's like, that's my era of wrestling that I love to watch. Or when I got into wrestling and love watching it. And I'm partway through that and I'm loving it. But
it's funny because both of us bought it pretty much on the same day. And you started straight away on the Attitude Era and I sort of jumped into the creator
character.
You
didn't even play it for 3 days.
No, I just made characters and designed logos and, you know, that sort of stuff. The stuff that I like about a wrestling game. Like, I haven't played WWE 12 or WWE previous ones to that, the SmackDown ones, because I think they're always SmackDown versus Raw leading into this, and then I think 12, might have even been 11, was the first one where they've gone away from the SmackDown versus Raw branding and it's just WWE.
Yeah.
But I know in previous ones they've had the ability to make your own finisher, like joining together animations from other finishers to create your own thing, and that's been tweaked quite a bit in WWE 13, so yeah, I jumped on.
Now, before we go on, Now, you're a big wrestling fan,
yep.
And a big computer game
yep.
fan,
yep.
And GSA, the meshing of those two was your ultimate love for a lot of years there.
Yes.
And to a point of buying Japanese games
yep.
with no English translation.
That's correct.
Going to an internet before YouTube,
yep.
downloading translation sheets.
Yeah, printing out like 20 pages of printouts with menu translations and character translations and everything. Yes, I have. Purely so I could play Fire Pro Wrestling on the PlayStation. So yes, I'm quite a fan of the whole creator bit. So I've spent a bit of time in the creator, but then since then I've then gone back in and I've actually finished the whole Attitude Era.
And I haven't.
But there was a few matches. Basically, the way it gives you a match, and it's a historical match from sort of the late 90s leading into the early 2000s, and you get to reenact a famous match. So you have, like, you know, your WrestleMania, Stone Cold versus The Rock or something like that, and it gives you added bonuses for doing things that happen for real in the matches.
Well, some you can't progress without doing yeah. certain things, and others are bonuses, yeah.
Yeah, and that unlocks extra characters, extra arenas, stuff like that. But then I jumped the gun a little bit and paid the extra to unlock all the unlockables early, and then I like the game so much I've gone back in and I've bought the fan access pass that is a bunch more of downloadable characters and downloadable arenas and stuff. So I initially paid $19 in the sale, and I think I've spent another 1600 points on it since then. But even if I'd have bought the retail copy, I probably would have done that. So I still think I'm
so ahead. It's a win. It's a it good is a game win.
I'm really enjoying it.
Back in the day, we used to sit around on your couch playing No Mercy. Was that the big one?
Yeah, No Mercy, and prior to that, WrestleMania 2000 on Nintendo 64 one? And yeah, WCW versus the World and WCW NWO,
and we loved, I can't remember which one we played the most. No Mercy was pretty good.
No Mercy was pretty good, I think, and then WCW. Probably yeah, WrestleMania 2000 we played a lot of, but then when No Mercy came out, that was what really sold us. And
I really haven't touched it since. Like, yeah. It was like, yeah, that was fun, but it was more the experience, because we were wrestling back in the day. We all made ourselves.
Yeah.
Like, so we only wrestled as ourselves, and that was fun, but it was being on the couch with three other blokes, or, you know, sometimes six, and we just hand the controller around in rumbles and things yeah. like that. So for me, the fun was the couch co-op, or
yeah.
the couch sledging, more the point.
Yeah, exactly.
So I've given up until now, where you've stuck with a couple of wrestling games over time.
They had Legends of WrestleMania came out a few years ago, so I actually completed that, and I think that was one of the first games that I got the full 1,000 gamer score out of. And that was very similar to the fact that there was extras tied into reenacting historical moments as well. Not quite to the same extent as WWE 13 is. You could still progress in the story without that stuff. But as you mentioned earlier, there's some matches in the Attitude that you just can't go forward until you've done.
I mean, there's one where you have to put Mankind through a table. Yeah. And if he reverses it and puts you through the table, that's it.
Match over, start again.
You've got to start again.
Yeah, well, the last one that I finished just on earlier in the week, Road Dogg versus Chris Jericho, and you had to finish the match by powerbombing Road Dogg through a table to get disqualified, being Jericho. And I actually had to go on the internet and do a bit of facking for this to find out what I was doing wrong. Because every time I brought the table in the ring, the referee would take the table out of the ring while I wasn't looking and get rid of it. And then I read on the internet that you actually had to do it on the floor so the referee didn't move the table. And to make matters worse, you had to do it in a 4-minute time limit. And when I finally did it, I think I had 1 second left on the clock. Jeez. When I put him through the table, and I was like, that's it, I've done it. I don't care that I only had 1 second left. I finally did it. But some of them are really good. Like, I know you've only done the first DX chapter.
Yeah, and I've just started Austin's run.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, there's a chapter on Austin, there's a chapter on Mankind, a chapter on the Brothers of Destruction with Kane and Undertaker, and you get to reenact the Hell in a Cell King in a Ring with Undertaker and Mankind, well, throw him off the roof of the cage. And then there's like a McMahon chapter as well, which is pretty good, where you're basically Austin versus McMahon and the Ministry. And being the fan of that era, it's really good, and they intersperse it with badly animated scenes, but they reanimate the interview sections on Raw. But some of the cutscenes, the animation isn't good.
I suppose it's, no, they're throwing it in. I mean, the audio is the actual audio from the time.
Exactly. But it's weird there, because gameplay footage is pretty good, and a lot of the time in games the cutscenes are much better rendered than the in-game, but it's kind of like it's the reverse in this.
kind of weird.
Yeah. But no, I've spent quite a lot of time playing it. I've created a lot of characters. There's
how many?
I think there's a maximum you can do of 30, and I think I've got 4 spots left. So what would that be, 26? So yes, I've made a lot of characters.
So how long was it till you actually started playing? Till you had a match?
Well, I did start with a match.
Oh, okay.
Before I created anything, the first match I did was just, I just jumped on and went, oh yeah, I'll try a match. And I did Daniel Bryant versus someone. I can't remember who it was now, just to see what it was like.
Yeah.
And then I thought, yep, I know what I'm doing. Let's create a character. And then I tried my creator character and I didn't know what I was doing. So I had to then go back and play Attitude, because when you play Attitude, it gives you a tutorial of how to play. So yes. So it wasn't.
Because I kept talking to you every couple of days. Oh, no, I haven't played anymore. I've made some more characters and I've done this, I've done that. I was like, are you actually going to play the game?
Well, it's funny because I've been playing it a fair bit. My wife's been hooked on some MMO on the iPad. So she's been sitting on the couch playing on the iPad, and I've been sitting on the couch, you know, Xbox controller in my hand. And pretty much every time she looks up at the telly, here I am, like, tweaking my creator characters. And she's like, it's just like playing dolls for adults, isn't it? It's like just dress-ups. And I was like, well, yeah, probably. And that's what made me kind of think, well, maybe I should play some of the game rather than just dressing up my characters. But yeah, it's made me want to go back and watch some wrestling, and thankfully, through the love of YouTube, there's a lot of stuff on YouTube.
You don't have to watch the new stuff.
No, I can go back and watch classic 90s wrestling. And I noticed the other day after playing SummerSlam 98, I was like, oh, I remember SummerSlam 98. That was a great pay-per-view, and the full show of that was on YouTube, so I jumped on and watched
it. The other thing I thought was weird, I know it's Raw, or WWE, 2013, but WWE owns everything now. It owns ECW, it owns WCW.
Yeah.
And the Attitude
and
Era.
And the AWA and USWA and a bunch of indies and stuff.
But it's the Attitude Era, and what you're doing is you're playing this classic era of storylines, essentially. Yep. And what you get in loading screens between each one is the ratings on as a graph.
Yeah, ratings.
It's WCW versus Raw. And they're showing who's winning in the ratings.
Yeah.
And you've got spikes and the little highlights saying, oh, this is when NWO started, or that's when this happened. But they're not acknowledging, well, they're acknowledging that WCW existed, but you think they could show both. I don't know if it's, they got the rights to it all now.
Exactly.
Wouldn't you show the running of the two? Or is WWE one and they don't want to acknowledge that WCW did anything good?
I think that's basically what it is. Like, some of the cutscene movies, there is brief footage of WCW stuff, and it's mainly in a derogatory sort of way of, hey, look, we put them out of business sort of thing. And then there's a little bit leading in when they bought WCW and Shane was at Nitro and stuff like that, for people that remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
that was an amazing moment that night. For anyone who's a wrestling fan out there, it was like GM buying Ford.
Yeah.
It was just the most ridiculous night to watch. It was just, anyway.
But yeah, and they show a little bit of that. But you're right, they own the rights to everything. So really they could, you could make, the arena for Nitro, but they don't. But thankfully, part of the creator stuff, people have gone out and made these creations. And in the old days of the wrestling games, you had to go on the internet and people would give you a list and say, you need colour this and colour that and Arena 4 and all this sort of stuff. But now there's the community creation section, and you can actually go online and upload your stuff and download other people's stuff.
It's all ranked too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
So the best ones are ranked by you, and you can go and rank someone's.
Yeah, you can review someone's work and say, this is really good. And people have gone on and created, the 1997 pay-per-view WCW arena and this sort of stuff, and they've gone on and made creator characters of people that aren't in the game. Like, there's a lot of moves in the game for people that are WWE favourites that aren't currently in WWE at the time the game was made. So there's, Ric Flair's moves and all his taunts and all that sort of stuff. So people have gone out and made pretty good versions of Ric Flair and
even better versions sometimes.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, because you showed me when I was at your place, you bought up some of the characters. Now, you went and bought the extra pack, which gave you access to other characters. I mean, I started off watching, and I remember texting you when I started playing, and you're starting off as Shawn Michaels and Triple H. And the models for them are actually quite naff. They look They look quite silly compared to some, but Goldust's character is amazing. It looks like a different generation game, like the Goldust versus the Michaels, and you're thinking, well, Triple H is one of the CEOs of the company. You'd think they'd get him right.
Yeah, I think hair is the issue, because Michael's hair looks terrible, but then Austin looks pretty good because they don't have to animate his hair because he's got a bald head.
Maybe
that's what it is.
But same with the ranking and with other people. I had a quick look at that, and Rob Van Dam was the highest ranked creator character that someone did.
And I think the fact that Rob Van Dam's actually just come back to WWE in real life helps that a lot of people want to download
him. But the thing with Van Dam, he's got those very designed tights. They're not basic tights, and people have gone in and made them.
People have gone in the paint tool, which is nowhere near even as good as, say, you know, MS Paint or anything like that. And they've done it with the Xbox controller and painted like the tiger skin tights with the airbrushing and that sort of stuff. And they look damn good. So,
they're people like you. There's worse than you.
Well, worse than me. I made all my characters and then I went back after I'd looked at some other people's and went, oh, I could do better. I better go back and tweak these sort of things. But then it's funny because I have a tendency to play games with the sound turned off a lot because I'm playing late at night and the kids are in bed and the wife's in bed. And then I was playing the other day with the sound on and I realised that all of my creator characters have the same entrance music. So I was like, oh, I have to go and do something about that. But anyway, speaking of games and fighting games, I'd had a bit of a slump from gaming prior to the sale. And what kind of brought me back in was actually a free game called Spartacus Legends.
Which is a tie-in to the TV show?
It's a bit of a tie-in to Spartacus Blood on the Sand.
I think it's got different subtitles each season.
Yeah. I've never watched it. I've tempted to watch it.
It was the first episode, and I've got the rest of it sitting there.
But it was a free-to-play game.
Yep.
But it does have, what do they call it?
Microtransactions.
Microtransactions, yes, where you can use real money to buy gold in-game, which you can then buy better armory and weapons and stuff. But I didn't actually need that in the end. I've gone through and played through majority of the storyline of that game.
Yep.
And I sunk a bit of time into that. And for a free game, graphically it's not great. Content, it's very much a button masher fighting game with weapons.
Sounds good.
But I had a bit of fun.
Played a lot.
I did. And there was a couple of sessions that I played probably 3 or 4 hours in a row and then realised that, you know, it was getting to 3 in the morning and perhaps I better stop and go to bed.
That's sort of more thing. Than just pretty good then.
Yeah. I really enjoyed that. And it is cheesy as hell. And I think the fact that I was struggling a little bit with a couple of the boss fights and then I went online and read some of the cheesy unblockable moves and I went back and beat the boss using the unblockable moves helped, because otherwise I probably would have rage quit because I couldn't beat, you know, certain people. But for a free game, I definitely got my money's worth out of it. I got quite a lot of hours out of that before I bought WWE, so that was quite good. But other than that, I haven't really been playing a lot. I know I've been buying a lot. As I said, I bought WWE in the sale. I picked up Kinect Sports 2 for $10 in the sale, mainly because it was cheap, and I thought, well, I've had the Kinect for 18 months, and I only ever use it for voice control of YouTube and
using it
iView and stuff like that. So I figured the kids might get something out of Kinect Sports. So I bought that. Again, haven't turned it on yet. But yeah, that was pretty good. But you had a bit of a dilemma with something that you wanted to buy during the sale.
I did. Talking about the No Quarters podcast again, they talked about Forza Horizon. Now, you spent a lot of time in Burnout Paradise,
yep,
which is a free world racer.
Yeah, open world racer with traffic.
So the traffic, but you drive around certain spots, so you go to an intersection and there's a race there.
Yeah.
And you choose it, whether it's a get to a destination or a do this or a do that.
Yep.
Yeah. And you played a lot of that.
Yeah, I did.
And I didn't. I had the game as well, and I know where I couldn't get into it as much. I don't know why.
Yeah, I think I actually bought that for you for a birthday present, and then I played your copy just when we first opened it, and I was like, oh, I like this. I got to get it myself sort of thing. And then, yeah, I played a lot more of it than you did in the end.
Oh, you bought the DLC and opened
it. Yeah, well, I bought
the... Oh, you got the...
I bought the, I don't know what they call it, the Paradise City. What? Yeah, exactly. The
edition. Yeah, well, I played it, but not being good at games.
Yeah.
One of the games I got on launch was Pro Street Need for Speed, which is probably one of the worst reviewed Need for Speed games. Yeah. But I have nothing else to compare it to. And I loved it.
Yeah.
And I've talked about it on here a lot because I played it forever. So for me, that's my racing game.
Yeah.
And I didn't like Burnout Paradise because of the traffic coming the other way. I like my racetracks. That's what I found.
Yeah.
And then we've talked about Project Gotham Racing, haven't we?
Yeah, yeah.
So I like those games, and that's all track-based as well.
Yeah.
And I like that. And they said that I picked up Blur. I haven't played a lot of it, but Blur is made by the guys who did PGR. But the guys who developed that were absorbed into, I think, the guys who made Forza Horizon. Now, Forza is, from all reports, a very, like Gran Turismo for the PlayStation, this is the sim racer as opposed to the arcade racer. It's very accurate and everything. So that's what Forza was known for. This is Forza Horizon, and it's a bit more, again, open world. So it's a bit like a Burnout Paradise, where you drive around this open world and pick up races here and there.
Yeah.
And it's made by a lot of the guys who worked on Project Gotham Racing, and it's like, oh, they almost sold me on it.
Yeah.
They pretty by selling that. That was one of the deals in the sale. And I was like, oh yeah, it was $14.95 or $19.95. It was cheap.
Yeah, I think it was $14.95 in the States, but it was $19.95 here.
And it's like, that's a good enough price. And if it's on the hard drive, it means I can jump on whenever I see you online. We can just go and race if we both have it or something. So it's like, I'll do that. And for 2 days, I tried to buy that bastard, and it had an error. Like, it came out with a Microsoft error saying, oh, it can't happen here. And you're going online and type in that error and it says, oh, reboot this and do this. So I'm doing all that and it still wouldn't work. And I was like, rah, rah, rah. And yeah, needless to say, tried it the next day after and back to $69.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, like, when it let you actually purchase it,
yeah,
that had gone back up to full price.
Like, so yes, not a happy chap here.
But then we just played the demo just before and it's very floaty.
Yeah, that was the way I thought I might trick around it because it wouldn't let me buy it. I thought if I download the demo from the demo, I could purchase the thing. Yeah. And that didn't work either.
No. But yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't pay $69 for it, but if it was cheap enough, I probably would buy it.
Yeah, for $20, I wouldn't mind it at $20. Only because I want another Project Gotham Racing.
Yeah.
Because we end up having so much fun with that game.
It's funny because we watched Fast and the Furious a couple of weeks ago, and then I went home and felt like playing a racing game, and
yes.
I played a little bit of LA Club Midnight Run or whatever it was that I was playing last month, and then I thought, no, I'm just going to get PGR out, and I played a little bit of PGR.
Nice.
Yeah, so it gave you that feel.
Well, I am tempted to buy, and I know it's barely reviewed, but I am tempted by the Fast and Furious game, which is meant to be shit, but it's a Fast and Furious. It can't be that bad, can it?
Yes, yeah, it probably could.
But it's at the moment, it's like $60.
Yeah, exactly.
No way. It will be $15 in no time.
You can get the free Facebook integrated iPad game, can you?
I could, but no.
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 You've got Candy Crush for that.
My work is obsessed with that now. People are all excited. I'm up to level 35. It's like, yeah, I'm up to level 214. So, and you're way ahead of me now.
Yeah, but this isn't the Candy Crush podcast.
It should be.
It should be.
And there's been one more game. You got ahead of me in WWE 13 because I started playing another game. I don't know why I stopped, but I had it sitting there. I needed a third-person shooter. So for a while I've had Max Payne, so I finally started playing that, and it's good. I agree. Again, referencing the No Quarters podcast, one of the guys on that actually gave up.
Oh, okay.
Because he goes, it's like they've got all the editing suite for Tony Scott's films and apply all. Because you got a lot of cutscenes, and even when you take drugs in this to sort of for health, you sort of get this shimmer effect, and this, you know, the picture moves and doubles up, and that, and you got these weird cutscenes, and it
is it as bad as Far Cry 2 when you haven't taken your malaria medicine?
It's like that,
yeah.
But just cuts and text come across the screen when someone says something, so you get the words come up of what they say. And, and I know Arlo pretty much gave up within 3 hours of playing the game, going, "Nah, this is shit," you know. But I noticed it. But now that he mentioned it, it's annoying me more. Where before I thought it was an element of the game, and it's like, yes, I don't need it, but it's just there. Now that I listened to him talk about it and say that he quit because of it, it was shit. It's like, yeah, that is annoying, but it's a 2-disc game, which surprised me.
Okay.
And I'm onto the second disc now, so I'm past halfway and playing it on baby mode, which is fine because you pull the left trigger to target, and essentially you just pull the left trigger and you're targeting on the guy. It's like, oh, sweet. It's fun. Like, it's good. The storyline, it's... They're trying to tell a story. It's very much like Man on Fire, which is the Tony Scott film.
Oh, okay. It's not like the Max Payne film?
No. This is the first Max Payne I've played, I don't know what it references to the other ones.
The original Max Payne was the first game to use bullet time,
I think.
I've never played a Max Payne. I've watched other people play them a little bit, but I've never played it myself.
Stranglehold?
I have.
Which is essentially the same developers, same sort of game.
Yeah.
I keep forgetting about the bullet time, so I don't use it. I actually don't use that mechanic of the game because I forget that it's there.
Yep.
There are certain set pieces in the game where it goes into it. Like you're on a boat and you're shooting at people as they're next to you on another boat, and then you'll go up a ramp through a building and it goes into slow-mo and you're landing and there's a boat next to you in the water and you're shooting as many people as you can in bullet time.
Yeah.
And if you don't shoot enough, you die, and then the hostage gets killed, and then you have to do that set piece again.
Okay.
So they're the only times I'm sort of using the bullet time, because I forget that if you put the right shoulder, it'll go into bullet time. I'm just, because it's in baby mode, I'm not needing to do it. I just want to get there. So I'm just enjoying it for what it is and not making it hard. Like, I just want to, it's because it is such a... It's a well-written story.
Yep.
I just want to play that story out. I don't want to replay levels
yep.
to get through it because it just doesn't interest me.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's about it for gaming, which is plenty compared to other months. We've sort of had a lull of gaming for a while.
Yeah, it's weird that we go through stages where we're not really playing anything, and then all of a sudden it sounded like, yeah, let's go nuts.
Well, I went a bit nuts at JB Hi-Fi in the last 2 days. I went and bought 2 games, so that'll be 6 months before I can play them. But I picked up Injustice because I had vouchers, basically. It was 20% off sale. So I ended up spending over $100 because there was a sale on. So I don't know how that works.
It's the same way when there's an online sale and we buy a bunch of stuff we don't really need.
True. through, and I'm a Superman fan and a Shazam fan, so Injustice is there. That'd be fine. I am trying to get the collection of comic book games that I will keep. Deadpool I haven't got yet because it's still too much, and all reports are saying it's a fun game. It's not worth full price because it's short, blah, blah, blah. So I'm not paying $70 for it just yet. And I picked up Far Cry 3 today because it was only like $25. So.
Well, that's good, isn't it?
Hmm.
Hmm. Well, I'll definitely be keen to borrow Far Cry off you once you finished it. Although you were saying it's got couch co-op, so maybe we'll have to play it as a two-player co-op.
It hasn't been, not since, what, Gears 3?
Yeah.
That we've actually sat down and actually gamed properly together.
It's funny, because we tried on a couple of things. We tried with Army of Two, I think it was, but we didn't get very far on that. And then we played a little bit of online co-op with 50 Cent Blood on the Sand.
Mm.
But yeah, with Gears 3, we actually played the whole story, start to finish, as co-op. So maybe this might be something to give a go.
Fingers crossed. Yeah, should be good.
He's hoping. Well, speaking of games...
Games.
We actually had the PAX Expo here in Melbourne over PAX the past Oz. Weekend. PAX Oz.
As opposed to PAX Prime and PAX East.
Yes. So you were lucky enough to get a three-day pass to PAX.
I did. Well, I paid for it. I wasn't.
Well, yes.
But
they'd sold out by the time that I worked out what I was doing and whether I could go or not. And by that stage, it was too late for me to buy a ticket.
Yeah, so I actually got the ticket for Christmas
off
my wife. Like, I told her, oh, this would be kind of cool. And she goes, oh, I'll get them for Christmas. Okay. Not really knowing what a PAX was. I knew that PAX existed, which is a Penny Arcade Expo.
Yeah.
But not really knowing what it is.
Yeah.
Like, I thought it would be more, I guess. And when I came around to it, I went in. It was Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Yep.
It was at the Melbourne Showgrounds, which is where we have the Royal Melbourne Agricultural Show here. So it's got exhibition halls and pavilions and things like that. So it's not in a convention centre, a stereotypical convention centre. It's an open space buildings.
Not all under one roof.
No. So it was like, this is going to be interesting. And I turn up at 10:05, I got in there, and there's a bit of a queue formed. It's like, well, it's only open 5 minutes ago, that's fine. And it wasn't really moving, which is, I expected a queue, and I wasn't really sure. And it was fairly long, and didn't move for ages, but I'm glad I got there when I did, because the queue behind me was getting much, much bigger.
Okay.
When we started moving, it actually wasn't too bad, but it just seemed to take a while to get going. But yeah, that was the start of the Queue Fest 2013.
As far as queues, how would you say it compared to Comic-Con last year when you were queuing to see Stan Lane?
That was ridiculous last year.
Yeah,
I actually went to Oz Comic Con this year in a different venue, and they learnt from last year.
Okay.
And they had it at the different venue is great because they had a second story, so all the photos and autographs were upstairs, so the queuing was all done upstairs while the expo space was downstairs, so it didn't interfere with each other.
That makes sense.
They did really, really well. Last year was terrible because the queuing ended up going through the expo center with no lining or marking. So I think we went around a lap twice behind ourselves. So I don't think we were in a queue at one point. That was terrible. This was okay. It's just convention room. I don't know. I tried to look at the numbers before we came on. I couldn't find out what... It was sold out, but I don't know what those numbers were.
Yeah.
But the main panel hall was 2,000 or 1,700 people.
Okay.
So I'm assuming a lot of people missed out on getting into things. So the first day there, I really didn't enjoy myself. I knew people, but I just sort of hung around with myself. And I'm good company. I just sort of hung out by myself the whole day. And I saw people I knew, but I didn't hang with anyone. And I sort of go, oh, I did that. And the expo room was quite big, similar to a Supernova or a Oz Comic Con or something.
Yeah.
But you had indie gamers promoting their games, like iPad games and things like that. So that was a good space. There's a lot of people doing that, obviously. There was that area. There's the League of Legends tournament area, which is crazy big. I've never heard of League of Legends. I think I've seen ads online for things like that, but I didn't realize just how big.
Oh, okay.
This game is.
Yep.
But apparently the winner of this tournament won $20,000.
Okay.
But the tournaments, when they have it in America, they get like 1.5 million viewers on the internet playing this tournament game. So it's like, okay, it's a thing, I guess. And World of Tanks had a big exhibit. Nintendo, Oculus Rift, there were people talking about that. I have no idea what it is. I think it's goggles. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, that's what you were asking before. Yeah. And I was saying it's not a game as such. It's the peripheral that is Oculus Rift.
I have no idea.
They were showing that at E3, and that's the only reason I know about it. It's because I read some stuff and heard some other podcasts talk about it.
So Alienware were promoting their expensive Dell computers. headphone people, Skull Candy, I think, were there.
Turtle Beach.
Sorry?
Turtle Beach, were they there?
Probably. But you couldn't buy a lot of stuff. Like, that was in the Expo Hall, which was mainly computer games. Yep. And there was Nintendo, and Saints Row 4 could be played, Australian edition. So without the anal dildo blaster gun or whatever it is that they've taken out. A lot of anime costume store, little things like that.
Yeah.
More queues. Like, there was some food inside there that had queues, and I couldn't get into it. Outside, there were food vendors with queues. So in the end, my lunch on the Friday were donuts. Because it was like, I could sit in a queue for 45 minutes, or I could buy donuts in 15. Yeah. So that was my lunch. It was awesome.
And then were good donuts?
They were okay. And then we ran out of drink. There wasn't left was Coke Zero. Like, they didn't have any other flavors.
Coke Zero?
This is lunchtime on a Friday. I'm thinking, Jesus.
On the first day.
Yeah. Mm. But, I mean, obviously it got better. They went and bought more stuff. And another pavilion had the panel rooms. So there were four panel rooms that you could see things in. The biggest being 1,700 people. The others a bit smaller.
Yeah.
And there was another room, what they call the Big Top. And that's where you had your tabletop gaming tournaments. There was a retro gaming console set. Everything from Super Famicons to Mega Drive. Some Master Systems, just one of each.
And so did you get to go on and play a bit of Paperboy or something like
that? I played Space Harrier on something, and Indiana Jones on the Super Nintendo or something. That was really good graphics.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Yeah,
anyway. I don't remember that.
Yeah, so that was a little area that was a bit of fun, and people were selling stuff, but do you know what you couldn't buy there? Computer games.
Really?
Yeah, it's sort of weird. It's like, you could buy tabletop games, your Magic the Gathering. There's a big Magic the Gathering section, and your tabletop and your card games, but no one was selling computer games. Now, I don't know if that's who do you give rights to? Do you let EB in and then no one else can? Or is it just keep everyone out? I'm not sure.
I think a lot of the thing with these expos is that they're shilling games that haven't quite come out yet. So you can't really buy a game that hasn't been released. And what's the point of selling older games?
Well, I thought, if you've got demos of games there...
Yeah.
It's sort of weird, but if you play demos of games, like real games, wouldn't you think, oh, I really like that, I'm going to go buy it?
Yeah, you would think that.
I thought getting one EB's in there, I mean, maybe it's limited because they're franchise stores and which EB goes in there. I don't know.
But then EB do their EB Gaming Expo. Surely they can sell stuff there. Maybe.
But you think a game store could come in and say, oh, we'll sell. But the fact that there was none there, it seemed weird. I mean, Ubisoft had a good booth, and there's the new Splinter Cell or Call of Duty coming out. Who's Ubisoft?
Splinter Cell is Ubisoft.
Well, the new one of that was the sort of the main one they were demoing that you queued up for, but there was Rayman and all these other games you could play.
Rayman?
Yeah.
So always fly Qantas because they never crash?
That's the one.
Yeah.
And you play cards in Vegas. Yeah.
Okay.
No, but they had, because Ubisoft do handheld and PC and Xbox and PlayStation. So there were a few, it was quite a big section. The only one that got me excited was the coming soon to Summer Arcade Flashback reboot, which you told me was coming, and I was a bit excited. I remember this fondly from my Mega Drive days playing Flashback. So this is the HD version that's coming in the Summer Arcade, which is not far away, I assume.
Yeah, it starts in August, I think.
It's a bit of nostalgia there. So that was a bit of fun. I played that one for a while. But something I did do the most of while I was there, especially on the Friday, because I was just sort of wandering around going, this kind of sucks. Yep. I don't want to queue anywhere. I watched people play Just Dance because they had a big screen up and a little dance floor set up, and they were just getting people to come up, and they had a few dancers there that would dance if no one else was getting up, but people were getting up and having a go, and it was just watching people have fun. Like, this cute little girl in a Pikachu outfit was having a go at dancing to something, and then Deadpool was doing Gangnam Style, and it was just, it was kind of awesome, to the point where on the last day, well, I went home early on the Friday because, like, I could stay here and queue and not get into panels, or I could go home to boxing class. So I ended up leaving and go to boxing class. So, yeah, it didn't really impress me much on the Friday because I didn't know what to do, in a sense. I didn't know what I was doing. I ended up, to my wife's credit, she goes, just go back, it's fine. I was thinking about
just not going.
Not going. And she goes, just go and have fun, it's fine. So I ended up ringing a friend who I saw briefly there the day before, saying, you're going in today? And she goes, yeah, I'm not in yet, but I suppose I should get up. And so, well, I'm driving if you want a lift. And she goes, oh, that'd be good. So I ended up going in with her, and we got in there at like 10:30.
Yeah.
So it was a half hour open, no queues, walked straight in. We got in the queue of hope for the actual PAX. Penny Arcade is a online cartoon, and that's where it started at.
Yep.
About two guys who love gaming, like tabletop and computer gaming. And this is their expo. So through their popularity of the online cartoon, they've become a massive enterprise. So this panel was them doing a panel live. So the guy drawing it and the other guy who writes it speaking on the mic, and they were both just talking and taking questions from the audience.
Okay.
So that had already started by the time we got there, but we were in the queue of hope. So if people left, we could get in. Okay. So in the end, we probably missed 45 minutes of it, but we got to see an hour and a half.
Well, that's good.
So it was quite fun because there were a lot of people throwing stupid shit at them. They knew a lot of Aussie lingo and urban legends and stuff. So there's they actually named the panel halls. One was called Drop Bear.
Oh, okay.
And stuff like that. So the panel he was drawing actually had a drop bear in it, which was a koala and stuff. And then someone actually told them about hoop snakes. It's like, what are hoop snakes? And hoop snakes are snakes that are the quickest moving snakes in the world. They're snakes that bite their own tail, get in a hoop and roll at you. And drop bears are actually scared of hoop snakes. So people wear rope loops around them. So drop bears see you, think you're being attacked by a hoop snake, so they don't attack you. So yeah, it was kind of fun and entertaining. And then, and being in a queue with a friend actually made the day so much better. So yeah, so I saw a couple more panels on those days and went back the Sunday again, and that was the same old.
Yeah.
I was with different friends this time, so again, queuing but with different people. Made the day much more bearable. I sort of knew everything by that point. I'd walked around that convention center so much by the end, but
yeah.
I kept going back to Just Dance. I just couldn't help it. And I actually finished my con at Just Dance.
That's great.
Because it finished at 6.
Yeah.
So I was there at like 10 to 6, and I'm watching some people dance. The guy threw some t-shirts. I caught one of them because I'm bigger than everybody else. Yeah. So that was fine. But then they go, all right, that's the last song for the last for the public. And he goes, can I have everyone from the Ubisoft booth please come on? So literally, because Just Dance was one section, but it was an area that probably covered 20 meters by 45 meters. Like the whole big space. So there's different people representing different areas for Ubisoft. And he goes, can I have everyone in? So you had like 25 people from Ubisoft all dancing. To Flow Rider at the end, and probably about 30-40 people watching them dancing at the same time, following the moves. And it was just like, that's a good way to end. Yeah, I'm gonna go home now.
All right, well, I guess the big question about PAX is, did you get to see the X-Bone?
Oh, that was awesome. Because, yeah, they said, big announcement, come to the Xbox booth, which was just a booth,
yep.
At 2 o'clock for the unveiling of the X-Bone. I was like, all right. I go to the Xbox booth, I look in the map to see where it is,
yep.
And it's literally a space that's probably 3 meters by 5 meters. It's got green walls with Xbox One written on it,
yep.
And a glass case in the middle that's covered by a black sheet. It's like, okay, there's not even screens or anything. It's like, ah, okay, cool. And they could be there by 2 for the thing. It's like, all right. I got there at 10:02. I wanted to be early. I wanted to see this. These people turn up and everyone's all excited, and they go in there, and under the glass case, there's nothing in the glass case. Sorry, there was no sheet over the glass case. It was just a glass case with nothing in it.
Yep.
And they went in, and under the glass case was a podium, and they went in, and they put a black sheet over the top, and they come out, and they picked what was ever in the podium and put it in the glass case. Then they took off the black sheet, and there it was. There was a console.
So it wasn't a hands-on...
Nope. There were, no. In the case, there was an Xbox, a controller, and a Kinect camera. And they were letting people in to go in and take photos. And I did, because I waited for 15 minutes to see it. I'm going to go in there and take a picture of this thing.
All right. Well, we'll have to put that up on the website just to prove that you did see the X-Bone.
So I was like, that was a big deal. And I did actually, because I went home on the Friday because I wanted to go boxing. I there was an Xbox. They did it every day, but there was one on the Friday saying, oh, Xbox One launch or talk presentation. And I thought, oh, I could queue for an hour and not get in or not. You know, yeah. So I was like, fuck it, I won't. And then I read on Twitter not long after that saying, oh, if for anyone interested, Xbox One presentation, totally missable. So I'm glad I made the right choice on that one.
Well, that's good.
So yes, no hands-on, no screen, no nothing. Literally a podium, a glass case, could even be a case. I didn't even know if it had fucking electronics in it. It was just, you know when you go to like furniture stores and they have those fake tellers? Yes, it could have been that for all I know. It
probably was.
So, I mean, I now know what size it is.
Yep.
That's all I got.
So not enough to change your mind to make you want to buy one at launch?
No. It's sort of like, yeah, no, you're not going to take my money just yet.
Alrighty.
Yeah, I did see that.
Well, that's good. Yes, I can. Doubt better leave. I'm running with this plan. Pull me, grab me, grab us in the fucking game. Have me. I'll be the president one day. January 1st. Oh, you like that gossip? Like you the one drinking what gossip.com. Now I got a word for your tongue. How many Rolling Stones you want? Yeah, I got a brand new spirit speaking in this. All right. Well, other than gaming, it has been quite a big month for movies for us.
Movies.
We mentioned on last month's show that you were off to see
The Wizard?
They're not The Wizard. The special presentation at the Astor Theatre of the 70s Superman.
Yes, with Margot Kidder, a special guest, which turned out to be the X-Bone equivalent of special guest, because unfortunately she did get pneumonia, so she couldn't make it. But the person who was meant to interview her was quite good. He's some actor. I don't know who he was. I looked
from
at
the
his
movie?
No, he's an Australian.
Oh, okay.
And he was in all this. I looked at his IMDb. He's been in a bunch of Australian things, like an episode of Sons and Daughters or something. But he was quite good. So to offset the fact that Margot wasn't there, he probably spoke for about a half hour, 45 minutes, just giving you a backstory of the Superman movie and how it got made. And it was, I found it interesting because it was news to me.
Now, you're a massive Superman fan.
I am.
And the Christopher Reeve movie
is why I'm a Superman fan. Yep.
But this was the first time you've seen it on the big screen, wasn't it?
Yes.
And was it good?
It was. I mean, the music is amazing. Yep. There's aspects that are amazing. It's a flawed film, but it is 30 years old.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with it, but it's not something I could go, oh, I'm going to show the kids. Like, Star Wars is also this same year old, but I could show my nephews Star Wars. No question that they'll enjoy it.
Yeah.
This, it's a bit long.
So it doesn't hold up?
To me, it does.
Yeah.
But there's a nostalgia factor there, and I've seen it a lot of times, so it's still there. There's aspects that don't, but it's fine. Like, some of the special effects don't hold up, some are still amazing. Christopher Reeve is phenomenal. I love the Perry White. I love Margot Kidder. The Lois Lane is amazing. Like, the thing with Lois Lane, Margot Kidder is not stunning to me. She's not stunningly attractive or anything like that.
No, she's not classically beautiful.
No, but her Lois Lane character is so phenomenal. Like, she's got chutzpah. She's got something. It's just, she's so well done that none of the other movies seem to have, like Superman Returns, Kate Bosworth, did not have any of that gravitas that she had. It was just, you don't have, I mean, yes, she is playing His Girl Friday or something like that. Yeah. You know, it's the same sort of character, but, you know, she did it really well.
Yeah.
But Christopher Reeve is just phenomenal in that role. Like,
is Gene Hackman in the first one?
Or he is.
Does he turn up in the second one?
No, he's in the first one.
Yeah, so he's Lex Luthor, isn't he?
Yes.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I've seen
him. And I mean, this is a great plot. Like, it's all about, you know, he's not superpowered, Lex, you know. He's smart, so Superman can punch anything. So, I do whinge about Superman Returns not having enough things punched. He hardly punches anything, if anything, in the original Superman, but it just seems to work so well. It was good, and it was great to see on the big screen, because it is a big screen movie, so that was good. Unfortunately, I saw it 2 days before I saw Man of Steel.
Yeah, like, I haven't seen Man of Steel, and based on a lot of the reviews, I'm probably not going to make the effort to see it in the cinema. I'll wait till it's out on DVD.
Yeah,
I don't know. I've heard a lot of conflicting reports. Like, there's people that love it, and there's a lot of people that really didn't like it.
And there's people who are indifferent to it, and there's people that hate a moment in it. And I totally understand all these people's arguments or opinions. It's not my Superman. I've come away, I don't hate it. It's just not mine. I wanted this movie to be what I could show my kids Superman, because I got my nephews who liked Superman when they were young and didn't know any better, and they just saw me with a Superman t-shirt all the time, to a point when if they saw a Superman logo, they'd say Mitch.
Okay.
You know, so that was kind of cool for a while. But when they grew up and had their own brains, they were still saying, why do you like Superman? Batman's cool. Why do you like Superman? So what I wanted was to point them, and unfortunately the 1978 movie isn't it.
Yeah.
I would love Man of Steel to be. That's why he's cool.
Yeah.
And to me, it's not that movie, unfortunately.
Is it dark?
Yeah. And the problem I have with it is it's humorless.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to be a slapstick comedy like Superman 3 with Richard Pryor. It's just so fucking po-faced and serious. And it's like, oh, it's a bit of levity. And that's the thing. Christopher Reeve is great in the original. And spoilers here. But there's bugger all Clark Kent, as in the Jewel characters.
Okay.
So, yeah, he is Clark Kent, who, you know, for most of the film, he's Clark Kent with superpowers. He doesn't even have a suit yet. So you're not seeing him as, Clark Kent reporter and Superman in...
Okay. So it's kind of like Clark Kent, now he's Superman.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you don't get that too. He's a great actor. Like, I think he's fine. He's a very good Superman. The best thing is, he's got a hairy chest, and there's a bit, girls are swooning. It's like, good, he's not these, you know, sort of good for us hairy chest guys. It's like, bring it on. Thanks, Henry. But it's just, the problem I think I'm having, and I may have mentioned on here before, but DC seem to be embarrassed, like with the name Superman, so it's Man of Steel. Now, I understand they're trying to differentiate from the other films, so they're calling it Man of Steel. With Batman, it was Batman Begins, then they went to Dark Knight, Green Arrow, they call Arrow, and they even make a mention in one of the episodes of Green Arrow with this vigilante running around, and these people at a dinner table saying, oh, what do you think we should call him? What about this? And, oh, what about Green Arrow? And they go, that's a lame name. So they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
Where you look at Marvel, they're not. It's like, I'm fucking Iron Man. It's a dude in an iron suit. There is no question. It's all there.
Yeah.
And it's great. Where I think with Superman, like you've seen in the trailer, it's like, oh, what about, and they cut the name off with the sound. No, like, okay. She's going to call him Superman. They cut it off. They only mention it once in the movie, and it's a throwaway line, and it's almost a dismissive line. And it's sort of like, embrace it. This is why it's not selling or not working, because you're not embracing what it is.
So basically, it's not a Superman film. It's the Man of Steel.
Yeah, well, because then they say it once.
Yeah.
Oh, and there's a thing, there's a few things they do in it. And one of them, I think it's to offset the jokes.
Okay.
He's got rid of the red trunks on the outside.
Yeah.
It's a visual thing. It doesn't ruin the character for me. But then, I'm used to the look of, I'm looking around the room now, there's Superman everywhere, and he's got red trunks on all these things. It's just something that's been around since 1938. So, okay, I get it. It's old.
Yeah.
But there's no reason to change it. If you can change it, that's fine. I don't have an issue. But I think the reason they did it is because you're Jay Leno's or whatever will do jokes about Superman and talk about putting your undies on the outside.
Yeah.
And I think, oh, I know how we can stop them joking about our characters. We'll get rid of the underpants. So it's got, and this is my theory. I haven't heard anyone else say this. And I think that's what it is. And there's another thing in there as well. And it's just sort of like the whole Clark Kent, you know, oh, how can people not know it's him?
Yeah.
So you don't really address it at all in the movie.
Yeah.
But the fact is, you know, people joke about that too, saying, oh, he puts a pair of glasses on and no one knows it's him. And sort of like, yeah. So two things that people have a go at. So if we take them out, they can't pick on it.
Oh, okay.
So those are things that I think they've addressed without embracing.
Yeah.
Where Iron Man sort of set the tone for Marvel movies, going, no, fuck it.
Yeah.
Let's just go all out. I mean, it's they've made an Avengers movie where you've got a giant monster, you've got a Norse god, you've got a, you know.
Yeah.
Just fuck it. Embrace it. Be proud and go. You know, they're wearing bright coloured spandex and it kind of works.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. So, I mean, there's good things in the movie. Like, Russell Crowe's very good.
Yeah.
I differ to my friends, but a lot of people like Kevin Costner. I didn't think much of it. But Henry Cavill's great. I thought the other supporting characters were pretty nil. They just weren't given any fleshed out whatsoever for a long film. As much as I whinged about them not punching anything in Superman Returns, this overdoes the punching. And the problem is we've seen cities being destroyed in Star Trek most recently. Avengers did it.
Yeah.
Transformers 3.
Yeah.
It's just, it's not new anymore.
Yeah.
It's just like, okay. And it wasn't as well done as it could have been. No. So it's not great. It's good. And it's definitely, I'm happy that it's made its money and it's done really well. It's just, unfortunately, not the Superman movie I wanted. And that's the problem with me being totally invested in this.
Yeah.
So pulling my own director's hat on, going, oh, I would have done that differently. I would have done that differently. But that's just my own fault for going in there and having too much invested. But yeah.
Okay. Well, Zack Snyder has a bit of a style, I guess.
Yes.
Did that come across in Superman or in Man of Steel? Or was it more of Christopher Nolan's influence, do you think?
Well, I like Zack Snyder. Yep. I think I do. Like, I love Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
I think Watchmen's good. I really like 300.
Yeah.
Sucker Punch, I enjoyed the visuals.
Yep.
And Legends of the Ga'Hoole I thought was really good. But I think with a lot of those animated films, the director term is not... Your animators sort of do a lot more of that. So I think he's got a very good visual style. But the thing with 300 and Watchmen, they're very much... I mean, they're scene-for-scene remakes of a comic. So it's like, all right, I don't know how much you've got involved in that. I know Dawn of the Dead was written by James Gunn, who's a very funny and very good writer. Who's going to write and direct Guardians of the Galaxy for Marvel next. So Sucker Punch was sort of his first movie.
Yeah, I actually watched Sucker Punch this month based on all the talk of Zack Snyder. Yeah. And I thought, well, I'll go back and watch some of his back catalogue.
And what did you think?
Visually, I thought it was really good.
Yep.
I liked the concept.
Mm-hmm.
I just think there were bits of it that could have been done better.
It's humorless.
Yeah, and I think that's what the main problem was. And there was a lot of unnecessariness to it. There were scenes that you kind of thought, well, they've spent too long on this scene where they could have put more time in some of the
bloated
scenes.
Bloated and just a little bit
heavy. Yeah, bloated heavy. Is a very good term.
Well, visually, I don't know if you could put much humour in it because it is a nasty topic or subject matter. So if you put humour in it, would sort of make it a bit a levity where it shouldn't be there. So I understand why it's not there, but it could have been a classic movie. Like visuals and everything that were there was awesome. It just didn't hold together nicely for some reason.
Visually, I definitely liked it, and I loved the soundtrack. The fact that there was mashups of like older sort of 80s, 90s alternative songs kind of given that sort of 60s sort of feel that the movie had.
Yeah.
But yeah, I enjoyed it.
I mean, I own it on Blu-ray because it is a visual thing. It's beautiful, but yeah, it's just unfortunately not fun, which is, again, I didn't get that from Superman. Like, the thing is, Batman's dark. I get that why. Superman isn't. I've read a lot of Superman stuff and a lot of takes on Superman. The reason he wears the big, bright blue outfit and the red is he's not afraid to hide. Yeah. He's out there. Look at me. Batman is all about being black and hiding in the shadows. Superman is like, do not be afraid. I am here. Look at me.
Yeah.
And the Christopher Reeve performance is so friendly and so happy, and he's just this, where they had to make him not dark and brooding, but they had to make him intense.
Yeah.
It's like he can be happy. He can smile.
There was a couple of scenes in the movie that are directly from the comics, though, isn't there?
They stole a lot of... Not stole. They're influenced by Superman Birthright by Mark Waid.
Okay.
And little aspects from All-Star Superman from Grant Morrison. Like, there's a speech that Pa Kent gives to, you know, I just want to be your son, you are my son. That's straight out of, I think that's Birthright. And the Jor-El, his little speech talking about Kal-El, you know, I think that's straight from All-Star Superman. So they've grabbed moments, which is good. It's, again, just like, oh, that moment in the comic, I would have directed that differently, and that's me doing it. And yeah, I suppose just the thing for me, it just didn't have the heart I think it deserved.
Okay.
And I don't know if that's, I'm an old school, I like old films, maybe. I'll sit down and I'll get a lot more time for an older movie than a kid, you know, nowadays will.
Yeah.
A 15-year-old will just watch and go, where's the punch and where's the this? Oh, that's awesome. They're blowing shit up. I don't know. Maybe it's a mentality thing. Maybe I'm getting old.
Well, speaking of big blockbuster summer movies, I actually went and saw a new release at the cinema, which I haven't done for a little while.
Yes.
And I went and saw Pacific Rim.
And I haven't yet. I'm intrigued. And
yeah, I think I kind of fall into the same trap that you fell into with Man of Steel, is that it wasn't what I was expecting. Like, we saw the trailers, and in the trailers, they don't you really thought
it was
give...
going to be a musical? And all of a sudden, these robots and monsters end up?
The opposite. No. The bit with the robot singing. No. It sort of... The premise is... awesome.
Yeah.
The fact that it's giant monsters coming out of the ocean, humans make robots to fight the monsters. Like, on paper, that sounds great. And in the trailers leading up to it, the trailers didn't really show much other than the monsters and the robots.
Yep.
And the bits in the movie where there are monsters and robots are really good. Like, the monsters have a look to them that makes them sort of have that sort of feeling of size. And the robots as well, they feel like big fuck-off robots.
Yep.
But any scene where it's just humans acting, I just sat there thinking, oh my God, when's the next robot going to come on? And the acting I thought was very bad. There's no real big name stars in this movie. Like, Idris Elba is probably the main...
And Ron Perlman?
Well, Ron Perlman, but I'd say he's... For me, he's a bit of a bit person.
Okay.
And you don't really see a lot of Ron Perlman in roles where he's not fully made up or anything like that. So you don't instantly look at Ron Perlman and go, Ron Perlman movie star. Yeah. But even his role wasn't that great. And his acting wasn't good either.
Okay.
But Idris Elba is probably the biggest name in it. And he was like chewing the scenery in certain scenes. And there's a couple of lines that he delivers that are well done, but the bits in between, you just think to yourself, well, you know, is it necessary? And to me, it was like they spent all this money on the effects and they just couldn't afford to get real actors. Because a lot of the people in it, like Charlie Day from What Was Sunny in Philadelphia, is quite a main character in it, and he's just annoying. And there's these two characters that are meant to be Australian, and they didn't even get Australian actors for it, and their accents are just terrible. They're your typical sort of, well, stereotypical how you expect Aussies to sound if you're not an Aussie, and that really let it down. But that being said, I'm glad I saw it at the cinema, and I'm glad we saw it in like gold class, so at least we had comfortable seats, because by about an hour in I was like, well, I hope this movie's quick, but it's like a 2-hour movie.
Okay.
So I was disappointed, and it's strange because every review I hear of this movie, everyone loves it, but I'm sort of sitting there going, well, hang on, what am I missing that these other people saw, sort of thing, or what have they picked up that I haven't? And stuff like, conceptually, yeah, it's great. And effects wise, bits of it are really good. There's a couple of fight scenes that are good, but then there's a couple of fight scenes that are a little bit unnecessary and stuff like that. And it falls into that trap as well. There's big fight scenes where they're fighting in cities and they're like smashing up the buildings and stuff. And this robot's here to save the earth from these monsters, but it's causing just as much damage itself to do it.
Don't watch Man of Steel then.
Exactly. But there, no spoilers, but there is one scene where there is a little bit where the monster puts his arm through a building and something happens. And I thought that was probably my highlight of the movie.
Yeah, but you're like one moment at Hellboy.
Well, that's right, where he throws the rocks at that guy. It kind of made me want to go home and watch Pan's Labyrinth again.
Not purely Neon Genesis Evangelion?
No, well, I wanted to get on Guillermo del Toro's bandwagon and go back and watch Pan's Labyrinth, but I don't know. I'd say...
Watch Blade 2.
No, I was just saying to you off air before, I've never seen a Blade movie. I've seen both the Hellboys.
Don't.
Is that the one that Triple H is in?
Yes.
Okay.
Written by fucking Goya, who wrote Man of Steel, you fucking cunt. Stop writing pictures.
Okay.
He wrote the Nick Fury movie with David Hasselhoff.
I didn't even know there was a Nick Fury
movie. There is. That's not bad.
So, yes. But yeah, I'd say go and see Pacific Rim while it's still cinema.
I will be.
And it'll be interesting to see what you think of it. But I was, a little bit underwhelmed.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm. Other than that, though, we did have another trip to the cinema.
An excursion,
yes. We dragged Joel along with us.
Yep.
And you mentioned that young people don't like old movies anymore.
Yeah.
We went and saw a very old movie.
A very old film.
And we went and saw the original King Kong at the Astor Theatre.
Yes, my home away from home.
Yes. And I'd never seen the original King Kong.
And you suggested that. I didn't even think that you'd be interested.
Well, I knew you were a Kong fan, and we actually talked on last month's episode about Kong the Musical, and it was fresh in my mind, and I was just flicking through the Astor calendar, and I thought, Kong.
Yeah, and it was a double feature with Todd Browning's Freaks, and it's like, oh yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
And I went and saw Kong, which doesn't overstay its welcome. It's a nice, short, punchy film. Peter Jackson, take notes. But it was good. I have seen it before. Not for a while, but I knew the beats enough.
Yeah.
And it's a funky little film. And I was thinking at the time, going, why didn't... I mean, we talked about Harryhausen not long ago.
Yeah.
And he was... Kong is a reason he made movies. He saw King Kong as like, this is what I want to do. And so many other people say that, including Peter Jackson.
Yeah.
But where were the films post-Kong, those sort of movies? And then I realised there was a depression and a Great War afterwards. Like, oh, yeah. But it just didn't spate, it was a big deal and it was popular. But yeah, there was no movies like that made till the 50s. And then I thought, oh, yeah, depression and
it
war.
Was 50s when all the Godzilla movies and stuff came out, wasn't it? Which was, again, also came a bit out of World War II, and it was kind of like the atomic bomb caused these mutations to turn these great monsters. But, for me, I always knew the concept of Kong.
Mm.
And I'm sure I've probably seen the 70s Kong when I was a kid.
Mm.
But it doesn't really resonate with me that much. But there was just bits of Kong that I thought, he climbs the Empire State Building, the planes come and get him. Like, I know the story. I just don't know why I know the story.
Well, you saw the Peter Jackson.
Oh, well, I have seen the Peter Jackson one.
So it's a story.
And I've seen the Simpsons episode a few times as well. So, but yeah, I enjoyed Kong. And it, as you said, it was on with the double feature with Freaks.
Which I knew of.
Yeah.
I knew it was this classic film, a bit controversial. Heard it was a horror film. And I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. And I thought, oh, we'll go home after Kong. We don't have to stick around. It's a Sunday night.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, fuck it, we'll stay.
Yeah, well, Freaks is a short movie. It's only just over an hour long. And we were there at intermission going, oh, do we stay, do we go? And we're like, oh, let's just watch it. And I think me, you, and Joel all got a lot more out of Freaks than we got out of Kong.
Yeah, it was... I was truly, I suppose I was amazed.
Yeah.
I was intrigued, and I came home and did research.
I did a hell of a lot of research. Like, previously leading into this, the only thing I knew about Freaks was it had been banned, and I didn't really understand why, and there was a bit of a backlash about it, because it is about circus freaks, and it's exploitative, but then these people were out making a living
as
freaks in circuses, but this was the first time that they'd really been put in a movie and shown on the big screen the way they were, and... I don't know if it was as exploitative as people think it was.
Because it's not exploiting them as far as making them out to be bad.
No.
They in the end, it sort of puts them in a nicer light than anything. It means they're very capable. They're not shown to be dumb or stupid or exploited. They're actually shown to be a family that looks after and supports each other.
Yeah.
Just quick plot synopsis for it. It is about a circus that has a freak show in it. And from what I can gather, the owner of the circus is a midget. He's not the owner. Because later on there's someone else. But there's a guy in the circus who seems to be engaged to another midget, and there's a trapeze artist who's very attractive, and he's sort of a bit smitten by her, and she sort of toys with him a little. Then she finds, the trapeze artist that is, and she ends up finding out that he's entitled to a lot of money he's coming into. So she's like, oh, her and the strong man of the circus.
Who didn't look that strong, really.
No.
He was just tall.
Yes. And they sort of just, they come across as assholes, basically.
Yeah.
And they go, oh, hang on, if I marry him, I can get his money. That's the main plot through the movie. But you got little intersides with other characters. You got conjoined twins, who one of the girls engaged and the guy she's engaged to doesn't like the other conjoined twin.
It's just all, yeah, he's all like, oh, you know, you stay up late drinking all the time, and then my future wife has to stay in bed while you've got a hangover, yeah, and stuff. It's like, interesting concept.
Yeah. So you got that, and you've got pinheads sort of there, and you've got the human skeleton, I found out later on what he, yep, was, very skinny, sort of deformed guy.
Yeah, bearded lady that gives birth at one stage.
Yes, that's true. And there's a he, she in there as well.
Yep,
a
lot of midgets.
And the guy with no legs, like, he runs around on his hands, but we read the wiki later and it turns out he's got really tiny legs that, yep, you just don't see because he wears a suit jacket.
But he was incredible.
No, the way
the movement he could get on those arms.
Mm. And there's a guy with pretty much no arms and legs. He was just...
Yeah, he was just a torso with a head. And there's one scene where he lights a cigarette, but apparently in the original version,
he rolled the cigarette as well.
Which was his circus act based in the 30s.
Mm. Yeah, so you've sort of got this slice of life, what it's like to be a freak in a circus.
Yeah.
And then the woman trying to get the money out of Cleopatra. The guy. That's her name. She essentially is going to poison him and kill him, and the other guys figure this out.
Yeah.
And for what I have heard as a horror film going, it's not really horrible. I guess seeing these freaks on the big screen back in 1932 or 33 would be quite shocking.
Yeah.
But that last 5 minutes, it actually is quite disturbing.
Yeah,
what happens. I know, it's worth checking out. And it's like, all right, that's pretty freaky. Like, Todd Browning, who directed it, he did Dracula before this. So yep. He is known as a horror director,
yeah,
for the time. And it is not disturbing. Like, I didn't feel uncomfortable, but it was like, all right, that's eerie.
It's confronting.
Yeah, it's like, okay, well done. Applause. Yeah. So yeah, it was really good. But like I said, we both went home independently and did research and read up about it because it was intriguing enough to do that. Apparently, let's just say, they do get revenge on the nasty people.
Yep.
And the strong man in the original version that doesn't exist anymore, the final scene of him is he's castrated and singing falsetto.
Yeah.
Which you don't see that happen, but that's...
It's interesting that they said that they had an original advanced screening, and one of the lines on the wiki is some woman in the audience that was pregnant
miscarriage.
Was so disturbed by the movie that she had a miscarriage. I know it's wrong to laugh at someone having a miscarriage, but it's probably more the fact that you couldn't really think that a movie would cause you to have a miscarriage. But they did... cut an awful lot out of the movie before it got its...
Well, half hour?
Yeah, it was originally an hour and a half movie and it turned out to be an hour. But a lot of the footage that has been cut is now lost forever. God. There's no director's cut DVD out because it is a 1932 movie.
Yep.
And I didn't really know much going into this movie, but then there's the scene where Cleopatra and Hans the Midget get married and they're all sitting around and all the other freaks are...
accepting her into the family.
Yeah, they're passing around this big goblet of wine and they're doing the gobble gobble, one of us, we accept you line. And it's like, oh, that's what that comes from.
Yeah, I didn't know what it was from.
No. And apparently that's in the list of, you know, top 100 movie quotes of all time.
Yeah.
And as I said, it was a line that I knew, but I didn't know where it came from. And now I do.
Yeah.
It was strange in the fact that, yeah, we didn't really have any real expectations of this movie.
None whatsoever.
And as you said, both of us have then gone back and done quite extensive research.
To the point where I couldn't find a copy of She Freak, which is the 1967 remake of it. I'm still trying to find a decent copy, but I can't. But I did watch the 2007 Asylum version called Freak Show.
Okay.
Which, modern sensibilities and Asylum and everything. Well, we were discussing off air before about the Asylum, for those filmmakers out there making really crap films or not as bad as sci-fi's, you know, shark movies or anything.
Well, Asylum basically are the sci-fi movie now, aren't they?
Oh, I'm not sure. I don't think they're doing the two-headed shark attacks or anything.
Oh, okay.
But what they do is doo-doo.
They make shit. They are, yeah.
They'll make Transmorphers when Transformers is doing that.
Yeah.
And they'll make Terminators or The Day the Earth Stopped.
Yeah.
You know, all these cash-ins on movies that are coming out on the big screen. Now, Roger Corman would do things like that back in the day. When Jurassic Park was coming out, he made Carnosaur.
Yeah.
But the thing with Roger Corman is he'd make quality films. And back in the day, someone's making a big-budget science fiction film. He'll go out and say, oh, when are you going to break down the sets? And they go, oh, Monday. It's like, so can I have them for 2 days? And they go, yeah, sure. And he goes, all right, so he'll go and write a script around around the sets that he's got and make a movie, but there'll be, you know, not a cash-in. Yeah. It's like, oh, I'm going to make something. And this is back when B-movies were a thing. So you could be a second feature on a drive-in bill or something. Yeah. So you will get distribution. You'll get money for this. It's a B-movie. But they were their own films, not this weird cash-in DVD, buy it when, I don't know if it's parents are buying the thing for their kids. They don't know what any better, or I'm not sure.
I don't know. But the whole big buzz with Asylum at the moment is the whole Sharknado.
Was it there?
Yeah, they did that. And that was on Sci-Fi.
Okay.
It's going to be on one of the Foxtel channels here. But it's kind of like there was this massive buzz for it. And within about 2 days, everyone's over it.
Once
it's like,
seen it.
It's passé now.
But once you've seen it.
Yeah.
Because people get excited with the idea. And then you go, oh.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Okay. Because they're bad films. And they're badly acted. Like, I love a Roger Corman classic as Death Race 2000.
Yep.
And then they remade it a big budget with Jason Statham not long ago called Death Race, and it's terrible.
Yeah.
And Asylum made Death Races with WWE's Raven and the Insane Clown Posse acting in it. And it's actually closer to the Roger Corman one, but it's still not great. And this is where, just don't do it right, but this Freak Show movie is quite true to the Todd Browning film in plot.
Yeah.
It hasn't got the trapeze artist trying to get money out of the midget.
Yeah.
It's set, you know, Depression era, from what I can gather. So you got these criminals who are sort of working at the circus. They're not part of it. They're just working there, and they're going to fleece it. And there's a girl amongst it, and then they convince her, or she goes, no, we'll get the money. And she sort of marries or gets in and goes to marry the owner of the circus and goes in that way. And they go the One of Us scene. They actually do the drinking of the goblet, but they don't use the line One of Us.
Oh, okay.
And that's sort of there. The freaks aren't. They don't have pinheads. They've got a few midgets. They've got a few people without limbs and things like that. So there is a guy with no arms who's smoking a cigarette and lights it. There is a scene similar to the original one in that. All the key factors are there. Again, like with Man of Steel, it doesn't have the charm or the heart.
Yeah.
And this is modern filmmaking through cheap filmmaking. And I think, I was talking to a friend the other day, and I think the problem is filmmakers grow up watching films now, where even in Spielberg days, he would have grown up watching theatre and certain type of films.
Yeah.
But if you're like Asylum, I assume the directors are 22 years old, or 25, 30. Yeah.
Who knows?
And they've grown up watching Top Gun or Independence Day.
Yeah.
And that is not a good grounding to become a filmmaker, because you're cutting corners from people who cut corners. And this is what you get left with, is this film. And at the end, I mean, it's quite a nasty ending in Freak Show. It's quite violent and visceral, which Todd Browning's doesn't have. But,
well, it kind of does, but it's implied. Oh, but it's not
visceral. Yeah, it's more implied.
It's implied.
Where this is not implied. This is, there's skinning, there's...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so it's a similar ending in the same way, but it's a graphical ending, and it's just like, this is unnecessary. And I like horror films, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
You know, I'll sit through it all, but I don't know, this is just like, okay.
I think the fact that Todd Browning's Freaks was made in the 30s, and I've done a bit of research because everyone's been throwing around this whole pre-code term about the whole change of the code of the Hollywood code of ethics.
Yep.
And Freaks was pre-code.
Yes.
And they changed a lot of what they could show on screen around sort of the 30s because Hollywood was getting a very bad name due to some real dodgy stuff that was going on.
Yep.
And there's quite an intensive wiki about it. You can look it up yourself.
Fatty Arbuckle and stuff?
Yeah, just a bunch of stuff that was really causing Hollywood a bit of ill repute. And then the government stepped in and they said, you know, clean up your act, we're going to regulate everything.
Yep.
But prior to that, there was a lot of stuff that you couldn't really expect to get away with in sort of 1920s, 1930s films. So we're talking the sort of the turn from silent movies to talkies.
Yep.
And then they're throwing out all this stuff that wasn't talked about in polite company in those sort of days, and they were putting it in movies, like, you know, promiscuous women and stuff like that. And the thing with freaks is the fact that, these freaks were making a living in circuses around the world. And a lot of them, by the sounds of things, were making really good money for the time.
Yep.
But this was the first time they'd been shown in movies. And probably what you don't get, say, in your movies of today or this freak show you're talking about, these are real freaks. It's not cinema effects. These are real midgets. These are real you know, pinheads and people with deformities that they're throwing in a movie. And I think that's what made it, the realism of it was because it is real.
Mm.
They are circus people playing circus people. But yeah, the research, some of these, like the pinheads especially, I didn't know what a pinhead was. Like I never really understood.
The only thing I knew with pinheads was Zippy, which is a comic.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And I didn't know it was based on some famous pinhead, again, a circus person as well. well. But yeah, it's like some genetic mutation that causes them to have strange shaped heads and, you know, deformities and mental deficiencies. And the guy that was like one of the pinheads in Freaks is quite a famous like circus performer. But reading it, it was when he was a kid, his parents sold him to the circus.
Mm.
And, you know, he was passed around between circuses and circuses sort of thing. And they would buy him, like one circus would buy him off another one, and they'd go and make a lot of money parading him around for people to look at. And they'd actually keep him quite well, and he'd get really good salary, even though he was probably not compass enough to understand that he was getting all this money.
Yeah.
But yeah, and he lived till he was in his 80s and died like in the 60s sort of thing. But yeah, well, I don't know how much of a life it would have been for him, but yeah, it's interesting. So yeah, I know Freaks is out there. Like you can torrent it. I know it's
probably in the public domain.
It probably is. I don't know if it's on DVD or anything like that, but yeah,
it will be around.
Yeah, but for me, I'd say check it out. It's worth
an hour of your time.
It is worth an hour of your time because it really was really intriguing.
Yep.
And
seeing it at the Acid was great. I mean, this is a cinema from the 30s. Yeah, seeing a 1930s movie, it's like, yeah, it's a great way to see it.
Yeah, and I think if it's going to be on at the Astor again, keep an eye on the calendar and definitely go and see it because I highly recommend it.
Yeah, it was
good. Really enjoyed it.
It was.
Yes.
All right. That wraps it up for the day. It does. I mean, that's plenty to talk about.
We've talked about quite a lot this month, so and I think that's...
Comic-Con just happened and there's so much news there that we're not even going to touch on it because it's just too much.
We're not there, so we're not going to mention it. Yep. It doesn't exist if we're not there. Yes. Well, that's it for this month.
Yep.
It's been a big show, a bit longer than normal. Hopefully I'll get the music right this week and we won't have the music kick in for the credits before it's meant to. Nice little editing snafu there. And probably if you have any feedback for the show, you can check out our Facebook. We have been a little bit quiet on our Facebook in the last month, but we are facebook.com/TheMassiveAttackPodcast. You can find us on our website, which is themapodcast.podbean.com. We're on iTunes as The Massive Attack Podcast, and we're through Stitcher as well as The Massive Attack Podcast. Well, that's it from me, Mitch, and I guess we'll see you next month.
That's it from me. Oh.
That's it from him.
Yeah. Yes. All right, well, thank you, people.
Two Ronnies, we're not.
Yes.
All right. Thanks, guys.
See you later. I gotta go, before I do something stupid. I gotta go, before I do something lame.